I love cliffhangers. I love suspenseful TV shows and movies where you're kind of sitting on the edge of your seat waiting to see what happens next. But one of the most frustrating experiences I have ever had in my life was going to see the movie The Usual Suspects in theaters. In the movie, the FBI is trying to uncover the identity of a criminal mastermind named Kaiser Sose. And the suspense in the movie is just building and building and building, leading up to the big reveal of who is Kaiser Sose. There's only one witness left who can identify Kaiser Sose, because all of the other witnesses have been killed. None remain. And so it builds to this point where an FBI agent is with this last final witness, and he seems like he's about to get the witness to crack and reveal the identity of Kaiser Sose. And just at that scene, as I was watching the movie, these little brown spots started appearing on the screen. And then the whole screen went blazing yellow in kind of a flame of light. And I heard someone behind me say, "Ew, what is that smell?" When I turned around, I saw smoke pouring out of the little projector room at the back of the theater, and flames. The projector had literally just burst into flames. So everyone else in the theater starts getting up and making for the exits, evacuating the building. But I just sat there saying, "No, the show must go on. Keep it going. I need to know who Kaiser Sose is." I couldn't sleep that entire night because I was thinking about the movie without an ending. Those of you who are fans of TV shows like Loki or Stranger Things, or maybe older than that, X-Files, you can probably relate to that feeling. They always end on a cliffhanger to bring you back for one more episode. That's why we end up binge-watching shows, right? Because we want to know what happens next. We want resolution. We want closure. And when we don't get it, we are frustrated and ill at ease. You may have had a similar response to our gospel reading this morning. We've gone through Jesus' crucifixion and death on Good Friday. Now we are ready to celebrate the good news, Jesus rising from the dead. But instead, all we get is this closing line. "They went out and fled from the tomb, for trembling and astonishment had seized them, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid." That's it? They said nothing to anyone? How is that the grand finale of a gospel? Why does Mark end the story before the big reveal of the resurrected Jesus? We know from the other Gospels and our reading that we had from Acts that Jesus appeared to his disciples and they ate and drank with him after he rose from the dead. Why doesn't Mark include any of that? Why would Mark take all the time to write out the story of Jesus and leave off the best part, the ending? Mark left off the ending because the story hasn't ended yet. It is a cliffhanger ending. It leaves us wanting more. Instead of leaving us with resolution, it leaves us with longing. The resurrection of Jesus wasn't the conclusion of God's story. It was the introduction to a new story. Christ is risen. The Lord is risen indeed. The gospel with the missing ending means three things. Easter is an empty tomb. Easter is a new existence. And the Easter message is for everyone. First, Easter is an empty tomb. The angel says to the women, "He has risen. He is not here." The miracle of the resurrection is about something not being there, the body of Jesus. The tomb is empty. The women were bringing all this stuff to to take care of a dead body. But instead, they found no body. The primary evidence for the resurrection was the empty tomb. That's still true today. You can go see it today in Jerusalem. There is still an empty tomb there. Mark provides a specific type of evidence, the lack of evidence. In a court of law, there's something called corpus delicti, which literally means body of the crime. What it means practically is that if there is no body, there is no crime. We know that Jesus really did die. Outside of the New Testament, there's Roman historians and Jewish historians who talk about his crucifixion and death. We know that there was a body in the tomb. The question then and now is this: where's the body? The angel, when the women arrive, answers with corpus delicti evidence. He says, "You seek Jesus of Nazareth, who is crucified. He has risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. Look at the lack of evidence." In other words, there is no dead body here because there's a living body there. But the empty tomb provides more than just evidence for Jesus' bodily resurrection. The resurrection of Jesus has grave implications. And I mean that literally. The grave has been emptied of its power. If you are frustrated by the non-ending of Mark's gospel, that's because the resurrection of Jesus is meant to be frustrating. Jesus frustrated the plans of Satan and death by rising from the dead. Death is no longer the final word. As Isaiah prophesied, he will swallow up death forever. This is a defeat of the enemy that every person in every culture has to face: death. The Bible calls death the last enemy. And Jesus is the one who has defeated this enemy definitively. The empty tomb of Easter declares that death is not the end for those who believe. The empty tomb tells us that death has been emptied of its power over us. Brian Johnson is a 46-year-old, super wealthy tech entrepreneur who has spent the last 3 years in pursuit of a singular goal: don't die. He spent more than $4 million developing a life extension system called Blueprint. He outsources every decision involving his body to a team of doctors who use data to develop a strict health regimen. This system that he created includes taking 111 pills daily, wearing a hat that shoots red light into his scalp, I guess so he doesn't get bald like me, I don't know why, but and also includes collecting his own stool samples. I'll spare you the details of all the other highly invasive procedures that he does on a weekly basis. Johnson is desperate to cheat death. And he isn't alone. Jeff Bezos, Peter Thiel, many other ultra-rich middle-aged men engage in high-end biohacking to try to cheat death. Not to mention all of us normal folk who don't have billions of dollars, who click on articles that tell us how to live longer, look younger, and regain the energy of a teenager. Many of us want to cheat death. But Jesus didn't cheat death. He defeated it. Jesus marched straight into death and defeated it. The empty grave not only tells us something about Jesus' fate, it visibly shows us that our new fate does not lie in any grave. There will come a day when every Christian grave is left empty. St. Augustine puts it like this: Jesus died, but he vanquished death. In himself, he put an end to what we feared. He took it upon himself and vanquished it. O life, O death of death, be of good heart. It will die in us also. Death will die in us also. St. Augustine is saying that the beautiful promise of the gospel is simply this. If we put our trust in Jesus who died and lived for us, then when we die, we will live with him. This leads to my second point, which is that Easter isn't just an event. Easter is a new existence. Many of us may think of Easter as a one-day event. Indeed, when you go into the stores tomorrow, all of that delicious candy will have already made its way into the clearance section, right? But Easter has only just begun. Jesus appeared to his disciples for 40 days following his resurrection from the dead. He shared meals with them. He traveled with them. He met them individually in private circumstances. He appeared all at once to a crowd of 500 people. The resurrection of Jesus wasn't just an event. It was a new life lived with his disciples. The reality of Jesus' resurrection is not a once-a-year event for the Christian. It's a new lived reality every day. Easter is a new existence. Because death has been defeated for Christians, we are free to live a different kind of life from everyone else. Imagine how your life would be different if you had no fear. No fear at all, no anxieties, no worries. How would your life be different? I had a philosophy professor who essentially argued that all fears and anxieties ultimately reduce down to one fear, death. And I think there's some truth to that. Why do Brian Johnson and the other tech bro millionaires spend all this time and energy trying to extend their life? Because they believe that death is a dead end. Why do we try to suck as much pleasure out of this life as we possibly can? Because deep down, we believe that when we die, that's it. What do you believe about death? Maybe you're here this morning and you're worried about what happens when you die. Or maybe you're the avoidant type and you just don't think about death at all. I think that's kind of the two American responses, right? We either anxiously worry about death and try to cheat it, or we just avoid thinking about it at all and pretend like death isn't really coming for all of us. But God offers a different way of life, a different kind of existence that doesn't fit either of those two. In Romans 8, the Apostle Paul says, "The Spirit of God, who raised Jesus from the dead, lives in you. And just as God raised Christ Jesus from the dead, he will give life to your mortal bodies by this same Spirit living within you." The same power, the exact same power that resurrected Jesus from the dead is living in you if you believe in Jesus. We don't have to live lives filled with anxiety and worry. If we believe in the Easter story of Jesus, then we can be certain of an Easter existence for ourselves. But the reality is that some of us do struggle to believe. For some of us, the empty tomb doesn't seem to empty death of its power. Instead, it fills our minds with questions. Chuck Colson was someone like that. Colson, who was once known as President Nixon's hatchet man, was the first person in the Watergate scandal to serve time behind bars. And just prior to pleading guilty and serving time in jail, Colson converted to Christianity by reading Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis. Here's what he said about the resurrection. "I know the resurrection is a fact, and Watergate proved it to me. How? Because 12 men testified they had seen Jesus raised from the dead. Then they proclaimed that truth for 40 years, never once denying it. Every one of them was beaten, tortured, stoned, and put in prison. They would not have endured that if it weren't true. Watergate embroiled 12 of the most powerful men in the world, and they couldn't keep alive for 3 weeks. You're telling me 12 apostles could keep alive for 40 years. Absolutely impossible." While in prison, Colson founded Prison Fellowship, which today is the largest ministry to inmates in the world. Colson was so convinced of the resurrection that he embraced a new existence, even after being a notorious criminal. The apostles embraced a new existence, a different existence, because they were firmly convinced of the resurrection. They couldn't deny it. Every single one of them went to the grave firmly convinced that Jesus had resurrected from the dead and that they would too. The first apostles believed this so strongly that they literally died to tell others this message. That if you believe in Jesus, if you put your trust in him, then you can know with certainty that you will live again. So third, Easter is for everyone. The good news of Easter is meant to be shared with everyone. The women are commanded by the angel to go and tell others. The angel says, go, tell his disciples and Peter that he is going before you to Galilee. Isn't that astonishing? Jesus has just risen from the dead, and immediately missionaries are being sent out. This is the fulfillment of what Isaiah prophesied when he wrote, on this mountain the Lord of hosts will make for all peoples a feast of rich food, a feast of well-aged wine. Easter is for people of every color, culture, and class. Every single person. You know, Easter isn't primarily a Christian holiday. Let me explain before you get your guard up. What I mean is that Easter isn't primarily for Christians. It's primarily for those outside the church. The good news of Easter is meant to be passed on. In Acts 10:42, Peter says, Jesus commanded us to preach to the people and to testify that he is the one appointed by God to be judge of the living and the dead. To him, all the prophets bear witness that everyone who believes in him receives forgiveness of sins through his name. Forgiveness of sins. A new type of existence is available to everyone who puts their trust in Jesus. This is good news for you, and it is for you to carry it out into the world. And that's what's so powerful about the ending of Mark's gospel. It places us right in the thick of it. We are left right there with those women, standing before the empty tomb with a decision to make. We have to write the ending. We have to decide what we are going to do with the historical fact of Jesus' resurrection from the dead. It is a cliffhanger ending, except we are the ones left hanging on the cliff. We are placed before the empty tomb with all of our amazement, doubt, and fear. We have to make a choice. Will we believe the incredible? Will we believe that the impossible has become possible? Will we believe in the resurrection from the dead? Will you? The resurrection from the dead is a fearful thing to believe. There's a reason that the women are terrified on that first Easter morning. The whole natural order of things is coming undone. Dead people can come back to life because a dead person has come back to life. The Gospel of Mark is not missing the ending. It is the first chapter of the gospel without an end. Today, consider your life and death in light of the death and resurrected life of Jesus. As John Stott says, we live and die. Christ died and lives. This fact changes everything if we believe it. I don't say this lightly. Today is the day of salvation. You are being offered a new existence, a fresh start, forgiveness of sins, and a life that doesn't end at death. Take the offer. It is a free gift. It costs nothing to us, but it cost him everything. If you're ready to do that today, I would love to talk with you about what it means to follow Jesus as your Lord and Savior. At the end of Mark's gospel, the women have a choice to make. Will they overcome their fear and carry the good news of the resurrection to those who need to hear it? We know the choice the women made from the other gospel accounts. If the women had in fact kept silent, there would be no Gospel of Mark, right? The women instead chose to become the apostles to the apostles. So I ask you, will you carry the gospel, the good news of Jesus' resurrection, to those outside these walls? Every generation of Christians must answer for themselves what they will do with this gospel, this news of the empty tomb and the risen Christ. The story has not ended. We are writing our own chapter. From the first Easter to this present Easter, Christians have carried the good news to others. In just a moment, we'll baptize David Hall. He has made his decision to believe that Jesus really did rise from the dead. He is starting a new chapter in his life that starts with the empty tomb and ends in eternity. There is great rejoicing in heaven today because his baptism marks one more defeat of sin, death, and the devil. But there is more. Today, David is being commissioned as a missionary. After he's baptized, I will take a candle and light it and hand it to him. That candle is a symbol that he has received the light of Christ. The torch is being passed to him to carry the light of the gospel out into the world. Will you accept the torch alongside David this morning? Easter is an empty tomb. The empty tomb is a sign that the grave has been defeated by Jesus for all who believe. Easter gives those who believe a new existence, a new way of life that is free from fear and filled with hope for the future. The Easter message is for everyone. That includes you. How will you write the next chapter of the gospel without an ending? Let's write it together today.